The Assassin.
You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest. You know I break necks, call me Jack Tate. I have no regrets while your life is fading. I'm a crazy fuck equivalent to Satan. When I'm behind the mic, I feel like the greatest.
What up, y'all? You're listening to Sports Talk with Trop, and I'm your host, Katie Trop. Well, this weekend we actually have the college football playoff that kicks off on Saturday. We have the Fiesta Bowl and the Peach Bowl, and then this is, of course, to play for the national championship. So let's get into the first matchup, which is the Fiesta Bowl, number 3 TCU versus number 2 Michigan. Right now, Michigan are a 7.5-point favorite, and, I never was really sold on TCU all season. To me, they were kind of a little bit of a fake team. They do have a really good offense. Their quarterback, Dugan, he's passed for 3,321 yards and 30 touchdowns and only 4 interceptions. So he's had a very solid year. But I just have always kind of felt like if TCU faces off against a really good team like a Michigan, that they're probably going to get their asses beat. So I'm not really expecting this one to be a close one. Because Michigan is just a damn good team. They're led by Blake Corum, their running back. He's rushed for 1,463 yards on the season and 18 touchdowns. So he's having a really solid year. And then their defense is just really damn good. So I just kind of have a feeling that Michigan's defense is going to just hold down the TCU offense. And I don't even really think this is going to be much of a game for the most part. I kind of feel like it's just going to be Michigan dominated. And I feel like Michigan's going to be moving on to the national championship. And then in the Peach Bowl, it's number 4 Ohio State versus number 1 Georgia. Right now, Georgia is a 6.5-point favorite. I kind of expect this one to be a little bit more close because I feel like Ohio State, they are a good team. They did get beat a couple times this season, but still, I just think they're really solid offensively. But Georgia, they're the defending national championships, or the national champions. So, they're better than they were last year. So I just kind of feel like this is going to be an offensive-heavy type game. When you look at Ohio State, they, of course, have their Heisman-nominated quarterback, Stroud. He passed for 3,340 yards, 37 touchdowns, and only 6 interceptions on the season. And then everybody's loving Marvin Harrison Jr. Yes, Marvin Harrison Jr., Marvin Harrison's son. He is currently a wide receiver at Ohio State. And unfortunately, we're going to have to wait at least one more year to see him in the NFL. He still has to play one more year of college to be eligible for the NFL draft next year. But that dude, he's been money. He's made some insane circus-type catches, and he's just had a phenomenal year. And so has Stroud as well. But then you look at the Georgia Bulldogs, and you have Bennett, who is just having a phenomenal season. He's passed for 3,425 yards, 20 touchdowns, and only 6 interceptions. And really, just Georgia, they haven't lost a step, and they've been the best team in college football all season long. I feel like they've been tested enough this season, and I feel like it's going to be an offensive shootout between both of these teams, but I just kind of feel like it's going to be close until about the fourth quarter, and then I feel like Georgia's just going to pull away in the end. And so my national championship, I have Michigan versus Georgia, which I think is going to be a great matchup, but we, of course, have to wait and see if that's going to end up happening. So let's move on to Thursday night football from last night. My Dallas Cowboys got the win against the Tennessee Titans, 27-13. Of course, Cowboys fans are drowning in tears as fucking usual. Because for some reason, everybody feels like they know how games are supposed to turn out. And it's like, dude, this is the NFL. It doesn't matter how you feel or what you think is supposed to happen. These are NFL teams. And yes, I know the Titans were playing a whole bunch of backups last night. And we did have some stupid turnovers in the first half. Dak had 2 interceptions and a fumble. One of those interceptions was most certainly on Hendershot. That dude should have had the catch. Regardless, they were bad turnovers. you know, if this were any other team, everybody would be talking about how they came out in the second half, had a good game, and learned from their mistakes. But of course, when it's the Cowboys, everybody's crying in their fucking tears and acting like they're the worst goddamn team on the face of this planet when they're 12 and fucking four, people. What I liked that I saw and that I've really actually liked for the most part about this Cowboys team is that they've been able to overcome any of their mistakes that they've had in the first half. They had those three turnovers in the first half, and what do they do in the second half? They come right out, and they actually get it going, and they score some points, and they were never down in this game. It's just so annoying sometimes to listen to Cowboys fans. They act like the sky is falling, and then that's why the media gets all on our asses, because you all cry at the drop of a fucking hat, and it's like, God damn, we won the game. Be happy with the fucking win. But no, we all got to be babies and run around crying because Dak threw two interceptions and a fumble, and he wasn't perfect. He wasn't perfect in a game. Jesus Christ. But anyways, Dak actually did have a good game. He went 29 for 41. Oh, look at that. He had 41 attempts. Usually everybody likes to throw up the magical stat of Dak has to throw for more than 34 passes a game. They always lose. Well, guess what? They didn't fucking lose last night. They won. He had 41 attempts, made 29 of them, had 282 yards passing and two touchdowns, and yes, the three turnovers, but guess what? We got the win, bitches. CD Lamb had yet another phenomenal game. He went for over 100 yards. And then Dalton Schultz was the dude who caught both of those touchdowns. And I mean, really, it's kind of funny that everybody wants to blame everything on Dak. And while the defense still looking good, we're still getting a lot of turnovers. My problem with the defense these last couple of weeks has been, why are we not getting at the quarterback and getting these sacks? I mean, Joshua Dobbs has not played in the NFL since 2020. And that was the starting quarterback for the Titans last night. And we got pressure on him, but not enough pressure that we should have on a dude who just joined the team like 8 days ago. The defense needs to get a little bit more pressure going on the quarterbacks. They're getting the turnovers, they're still rock solid, but they haven't been getting the sacks that they need to get. That's my only concern other than the turnovers. Yes, the turnovers suck, but guess what? The Cowboys are 12 and 4, people. We are headed in. We haven't lost two games in a row this entire season. That's a fucking accomplishment, y'all. If we're talking about any other team, the Bills, the Chiefs, the Bengals, if they're having this type of season, ain't nobody saying shit. But when it's the Cowboys, it's a fucking cry. Shut the fuck up, y'all. We got the win and we're 12 and fucking 4. 12 and 4. That's a good ass season. Jesus Christ, Cowboys fans can be annoying sometimes. And this is coming from a Cowboys fan, but Jesus Christ. Oh my God, Dak threw another interception. Shut up. We're 12 and fucking 4. Cry when the playoffs roll around. When we lose in the playoffs, that's when you motherfuckers can start crying. But we ain't lost in the playoffs yet. So shut the fuck up. Ugh. Let's get into the rest of the Week 17 games. They will all be on Sunday. And then, of course, a Monday night game this week. Actually, the last Monday night game of the season. Because we are in Week 17. And then last week of the season's next week. So we are in the nitty-gritty. There actually aren't a lot of good matchups this week. It's actually a lot of really bad teams against a lot of really good teams. But it feels like a lot of teams are going to be playing their starter for the most part because, you know, they're still working on seeding. There's still a couple of teams up for divisions and the last couple of playoff spots. So there are things at stake this weekend, but it's just going to be a lot of really really bad matchups for the most part. So let's get started with the Arizona Cardinals at the Atlanta Falcons. This is a doesn't matter type of game. Right now, the Falcons are a 3.5-point favorite. And since both teams are pretty much garbage, I just kind of feel like one of these teams, they're looking for a win. Arizona has just been an awful team this year, but they actually played pretty decent against the Buccaneers. And Atlanta, I don't know if they really even want to win a game because, hey, they're set up in a pretty good draft spot right now. So they're really just probably looking to the draft position next year. So I kind of feel like it's going to be a close game because they're two evenly matched teams. But I just kind of feel like Arizona is going to come out on top on this one, 20-17. Then the Chicago Bears are at the Detroit Lions. Right now, the Lions are a 5.5-point favorite. Chicago's another team that really has nothing to play for. As a matter of fact, they're actually in line for the first pick in the draft. So they might actually want to they benefit from losing. Whereas Detroit is still looking for a playoff spot. I think Detroit's coming off of a bad loss last week. They actually play really well at home. So I kind of feel like Detroit's going to come out and they're going to dominate most of this game. And I've got Detroit winning 28-17. Then the Denver Broncos are at the Kansas City Chiefs. Right now the Chiefs are a 12.5-point favorite. Denver just fired their coach. They don't really have much to play for other than pride. I don't think they're going to come out and lay an egg, but I mean, really, they haven't come out and done anything at all this season. Whereas the Chiefs are rocking and rolling, and while this is a division matchup, those tend to be kind of close games. It's the end of the season, and I just kind of feel like Denver, they don't really have much to play for. So I have Kansas City rocking and rolling in this one, 27-14. Then the Miami Dolphins are at the New England Patriots. Right now, the Dolphins are a 9.5-point favorite, which I kind of think is odd because now, granted, I may have printed out this these picks before Tua was ruled out, but I don't think I did. I printed these out on Wednesday, and I can't recall when he was ruled out. And so sometimes the line changes by the time I get around to recording my my podcast. So the line might have changed, but right now Miami's favored at 9.5, which I just can't believe because I feel like both of these teams are fairly equal. They're both careening into the earth quick, and neither one of them has really impressed at this current point in time. You know, the Dolphins started off the season really hot, but honestly, even before the announcement of Tua going to be out for this week with another concussion, I actually was leaning towards New England the entire time just because this is a division matchup, but Miami really haven't played well at all. And New England, even though they've lost these last couple of games, they still have played all the way till the end. This is a home matchup for New England. I kind of feel like this team, if anything, is playing for pride. And I feel like they're going to get the win. It's going to be a close one, but I think they're going to get the win 20-17. Then the Indianapolis Colts are at the New York Giants. Right now, the Giants are a 3.5-point favorite. The Colts are just bad. The Giants are still playing for a playoff spot. If they get the win, they are in. So I kind of feel like they at least have something to play for, where the Colts, it's just like, ugh, who the hell knows what's going on with this crap bag team. So I have the Giants winning 23-13. Then the New Orleans Saints are at the Philadelphia Eagles. Right now, the Eagles are a 6.5-point favorite. And it doesn't matter who plays at quarterback for the Eagles. I just feel like they're a far superior team than the Saints. The Saints don't have much to play for this season. They're not a good team at all. So I'm actually expecting the Eagles to stomp the Saints 27-10. Then the Carolina Panthers are at the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Right now, the Bucs are a 2.5-point favorite. And the Panthers have played really, really well since Steve Wilks took over at the coaching position here. And they're really good on the ground. And the Buccaneers, they just have not found any type of identity whatsoever. They're just so out of sync. They have all these stupid penalties. Their receivers are dropping passes. Their offensive line can't block for shit. Tom Brady's having these weird passes where he's just overthrowing motherfuckers. And the defense, their really only good game they've had all season was last week. So with that being said, I kind of feel like they're going to bounce back and kind of be feeling themselves from the end of last week's game. I feel like the defense is going to clamp it down. The offense is going to do just enough to get some scores here. I do think the Panthers will make this a very good game. I have a feeling it might be another one of those where Tom Brady drives his team down the field and has another comeback win in him. And I have the Buccaneers winning a very close game, 21-20. Then the Cleveland Browns are at the Washington Redskins football team Commanders. Right now, Washington is a 2.5-point favorite, and Cleveland is just bad. You know, Deshaun Kutson, he hasn't looked good at all. I wasn't expecting him to look good, though. I mean, he hasn't played in a year and a half, so he has a lot of catching up to do. Whereas Washington actually has something to play for, even though their quarterback situation has just been so weird all season long. Carson Wentz is going to be starting again this week. I don't know if that's going to provide them much of a spark as opposed to Heinicke, but I do think Washington is the better team. It's looking like Chase Young is going to play. So I just kind of feel like Washington has a little bit more to play for, and they're going to get the win this week, 24-13. And then Jacksonville Jaguars are at the Houston Texans. Right now, Jacksonville is a 4.5-point favorite. You know that the Texans only have two wins on the season, and one of those wins is against Jacksonville already. This is a division matchup, so I do think it's going to be a close game. But Jacksonville is playing for a playoff spot. So I kind of feel like they're going to have a little bit more in the tank. Offensively, they have looked really on for the last month and a half, whereas the Texans, they just are probably playing for that first overall pick, and a win doesn't benefit them in any way, shape, or form. So I have the Jaguars winning a close one, 27-20. Then turning to the afternoon games, we have the San Francisco 49ers at the Las Vegas Raiders. Right now, the 49ers are a 5.5-point favorite. I don't know what the fuck the Raiders are doing. They are actually in playoff contention, and this week they decided they're going to sit Derek Carr for the last two games and start Jarrett Stidham. I will say, yeah, Carr has not had that great of a season, but Jarrett Stidham, he gives you the best chance to win these last two games. It's also weird because the Raiders and Derek Carr have apparently mutually agreed for him to not even show up for practice or even be at involved with the team whatsoever in these last two games of the regular season games of the season, which is just very, very odd because Derek Carr is one of the highest paid quarterbacks in the league. This dude's got, I think he's making $40 million this year, and he's not even walking in the building. So he just gets paid to just watch the team on TV. And I know he wants to be there. As a matter of fact, I think this is just weird because while I don't think Derek Carr is the greatest quarterback of all time, don't get me wrong, he's got issues, but it's not exactly his fault. I mean, he's had a different coach his entire career. But just for me, he's a great leader, and the locker room does like him, and they do rally around him, and to me, that says more than anything. If your locker room likes you, that's the number one thing a quarterback needs. Obviously, they need to play well on the field, but if you are a locker room guy and your team rallies around you, it doesn't fucking matter. You can win with that. And so it's just weird to me that they're benching Carr, and obviously, this means they're going to be moving on from him, and that's going to be very interesting what happens in the offseason with him, because he's going to have, you know, he has a no-trade clause, so basically he's going to get to tell the Raiders, I want to go here, and if you don't want to send me here, well, go fuck yourselves. You either got to release me or trade me or deal with me. But at this point, I don't really expect him to be a Raider anymore. With that being said, the 49ers, you know, they look like a solid-ass team. They look like one of the best teams in the league. So I kind of feel like this is just going to be an absolute assault from the 49ers, and I think they're going to stomp the Raiders 28-10. Then the New York Jets are at the Seattle Seahawks. Right now the Jets are a 2.5-point favorite. Both of these teams are very up and down. They've had their moments of looking good, and then they've had their moments of looking really bad. With Seattle at home in this one, I just kind of feel like they're going to get it going. I feel like this is going to be a defense-heavy type of game because both defenses are really good. But I just kind of feel like Seattle's going to put together a good enough game here, and they're going to get the win over the Jets 21-16. Then the Minnesota Vikings are at the Green Bay Packers. Right now the Packers are a 3.5-point favorite, and the Packers are actually rolling right now. The Vikings look really solid as well, but this is the division matchup. So I kind of have a feeling this is going to be a shootout between Aaron Rodgers and Kirk Cousins. And I just think, you know, the Packers at home, they already lost to the Vikings earlier in the season, so I just kind of feel like they're going to split these matchups. And I have Aaron Rodgers and the Packers eking this one out 30-24. Then the last afternoon game is the Los Angeles Rams at the Los Angeles Chargers. Right now the Chargers are a 6.5-point favorite. The Rams are pretty much just playing for pride, whereas the Chargers, you know, they've already got into the playoffs, but I just kind of feel like they want to go into the playoffs with some type of good momentum because nobody really believes in them. And so they're going to need to show everybody that we need to believe in them. So I feel like the Chargers are going to put together a really good game here. I do think the Rams will play well. You know, Baker Mayfield has a lot to play for. He has to put out a resume out there for his offseason. And so I feel like it's going to be a close game to start, but the Chargers will pull away in the second half. And I have the Chargers winning this one 34-20. Then the Sunday night game is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers at the Baltimore Ravens. Right now, the Ravens are a 3.5-point favorite. Not sure what's going to happen with Lamar Jackson. They haven't really said if he's playing or not. I kind of have a feeling he won't be playing. It doesn't sound like he's playing. So I have a feeling this is going to be a defense-heavy game, which is typical for Baltimore-Pittsburgh. I think it's going to be a pretty boring game, though, just back-and-forth field goal-type game. Just with the Ravens at home, Steelers, not that good of a team. I feel like Baltimore is going to do just enough to get the win, and I have Baltimore winning this one 17-13. All right, and then with Luka Doncic having that fucking fantastic, record-breaking, historic night in the NBA earlier this week, it got me to thinking about some of the greatest NBA comebacks. I did mention that Tracy McGrady comeback years ago, and it actually does make this list. I decided to do the top five greatest NBA comebacks. And, of course, T-Mac does make this one because it was an excellent comeback. And so I have the actual statistics rather than just me bouncing off my memory. So let's get it started with the top five greatest NBA comebacks. Most of these are actually regular season. And I think that's just because, you know, a series is more about the entire thing, whereas like one comeback in one game is usually just like one game. So the majority of these are actually regular season games, but there is one awesome fucking playoff game in here as well. So let's get it started with number five on my top five greatest NBA comebacks. With number five, December 9th, 2004. The San Antonio Spurs versus the Houston Rockets. Yes, this is the T-Mac game I was referencing in the last episode. This was a crazy ending sequence. I mean, the Houston Rockets were down 76-68 with 36 seconds left to go and no timeouts. Now, T-Mac, Tracy McGrady is probably one of the most underrated players of all time. He doesn't get talked about like a lot of the legends do. But if you watched Tracy McGrady in real time, this dude was so much fun to watch. He could score so quick and so fast, and he could do it by himself. And he was just such a fun-ass player to watch. And this was probably his greatest moment. Well, one of his greatest moments. And he did this a few times, but this was one of the greatest times that he did it. So there were 36 seconds left to go. And basically what would happen is in a sequence of 33 seconds, Tracy McGrady would go off and score 13 points. He would score 4 3-pointers. One of them he would actually get fouled on, so it would be a 4-point play. And it's just one of the craziest sequence of events because, you know, so they've got the ball at 36 seconds. They pass the ball real quick to McGrady. He tosses up for a three, knocks it down. Then the Spurs get the ball back, of course. They foul the Spurs real quick, and they actually knock down one of the two free throws. So it's not like the Spurs aren't even scoring points in between on this little sequence here. They do. But there's also some big defensive stops that the Rockets would end up getting in just this matter of 36 seconds. And they would go back and forth. And ultimately, the Houston Rockets would get the win 81-80. It was just one of the craziest sequence of events to ever watch because usually when you're down with just 36 seconds left to go, you're thinking, yeah, there's this outside shot that something could happen. But chances are, and you got to remember at this time, this is at the height of the San Antonio Spurs dynasty. We're talking Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili. You know, we're talking these type of dudes on the team. And then at this time also, the Houston Rockets were a damn good team with that. You know, Tracy McGrady, this was Yao Ming as well. So this was a heated rivalry. And for T-Mac to do this, it was insane. And it was just an insane to come back to watch. And it really does sear in my brain. Like, I think about this moment all the time, just at how insane it was for T-Mac to do that. And as I said, I've always kind of felt like T-Mac is one of the most underrated players in NBA history, just because he does not get the same type of accolades. And obviously, it's because, you know, he never competed for a championship. None of the teams he ever was on actually ever made it really far into the playoffs. So I kind of feel like, you know, he doesn't have much of a postseason history for us to be like, oh yeah, remember when T-Mac did that? But nah, man, T-Mac was just a fun ass player to watch. And I just miss that dude, because he was just, I loved Tracy McGrady no matter what uniform that dude was in. Then at number four in my top five greatest NBA comebacks, it was May 7th, 1995. Now, this is the only one where we had a playoff game. It was game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals between the Indiana Pacers and the New York Knicks. If you are a basketball fan, you know what this game is. This is called the Reggie Miller game, where he would go off for 8 points in 9 seconds. Yeah, 9 freaking seconds. And this was a heated rivalry at the time. You know, this is a playoff game. Both these teams damn good. You know, this is a Patrick Ewing-led New York Knicks team. And then, of course, the great Reggie Miller on the Indiana Pacers. So the Pacers are down 105-99 with 18 seconds left to go. And in a matter of 9 seconds, Reggie Miller would make some huge fucking plays. He would first get the ball, make a three-pointer. And then as the Knicks are trying to inbound the ball, he gets the huge defensive play, knocks down another three-pointer. And it's just one of the craziest plays you'll ever see. It's actually a very infamous play, if you know what I'm talking about, when Reggie Miller turns to one of the biggest Knicks fans, Spike Lee, in the crowd, and gives him the, like, choking sign, where he's, like, strangling himself, basically, like, ha-ha, you bitch-ass Knicks choked. Because that's what would happen in this game, is the Indiana Pacers would go on to not only win this game, but they won the series as well. But they won game one of the Eastern Conference semis, 107-105. In one of the most crazy historic games of all time. But to see Reggie Miller just get 8 points in 9 seconds, it's nuts, because he just, like, literally just turned around, like, boom, 3 points, boom, defensive play, boom, 3 points, ah, bitch, we win. Like, it was just crazy to watch, and just an excellent, excellent comeback in NBA history. Then at number three on my top five greatest NBA comebacks, it is April 30th, 2021, so actually not that long ago. It is the Boston Celtics versus the San Antonio Spurs. This was actually kind of similar to what happened with Luka the other night when he was playing for the Mavericks, because in this one, you know, Luka had a historic triple-double and he dropped 60 points, so you got to talk about that. But in this one, a motherfucker dropped 60 points. And that dude is Jason motherfucking Tatum. He dropped 60 points in this game. And he would be the huge reason why the Boston Celtics were able to make a huge comeback against the San Antonio Spurs. At one point in this game, Boston was down 32 points in the second quarter. They were able to cut the lead down to 13 in the third quarter. And they were able to end up forcing overtime, in which Jason Tatum, he just took over this game in the second half. And they were able to force overtime and eventually get the win, 143-140. So that was just a crazy turn of events. As I said, being down 32, I mean, I think that's it's legitimately one of the ranked highest. I think it's one of the top five biggest comebacks points-wise ever, and it just happened a few years ago. And when somebody drops 60 points like Jason Tatum, that just goes to show how much he meant to this team, how much he drove this team to win that game, just like Luka did earlier in the week for the Dallas Mavericks. Then at number two on my top five greatest NBA comebacks, you know I got to get my boy Kobe Bryant in on this shit, because Kobe was the king of the comeback. And there are actually many points in his career that you could talk about comebacks. I mean, obviously, the 81-point game is one of the most phenomenal, because the Lakers did have to make a comeback in that game. That's what a lot of people don't usually discuss, is that the Lakers were getting their ass beat in that game, and so Kobe had to go off, and he ended up scoring 81. But that's not this game. This is actually much earlier than that. It would be in December 6th, 2002, the Dallas Mavericks versus the Los Angeles Lakers. This is a damn good Mavericks team, by the way. This is the Steve Nash, Dirk Nowitzki era, okay? So this is a really good Mavericks team. And but this is also a really good Lakers team. This is right at their height of their three-win dynasty right there. So at one point in this game, they were down 30 points in the third quarter. Then they were still down 27 points in the fourth quarter. So it's like, how the fuck is this going to happen? Well, Kobe Bryant would be that dude. He would go off. This is kind of like a signature game for him where he would really like take over. And while at the time he hadn't coined this term yet, but this was definite Mamba mentality right here. Bryant would end up with 21 points, and he would also have the game-winning basket with 8.4 seconds left to go in a game when the Lakers would end up winning 105-103. And like I said, they were down 30 points at one time, so this is another one of those games where it's one of the biggest deficits in history where they were able to come back. And this was, like I said, a damn good Mavericks team, damn good Lakers team, and it was a damn good comeback. And you know I had to put my homeboy Kobe Bryant in there because I always got to put Kobe Bryant in my my basketball lists because I love Kobe. And then at number one on my top five greatest NBA comebacks, it's literally the biggest comeback in NBA history. It was on November 27th, 1996. The Utah Jazz versus the Denver Nuggets. Yes, this Utah Jazz team was when the Utah Jazz were one of the best teams in the league. This was with Karl Malone and John Stockton and Jeff Hornacek. At one point, they were down 70-36 at halftime. They would be down 36 points at one point in this game. And in the second half, they would mount one of the greatest comebacks in NBA history ever. Karl Malone would end up with 31 total points. Jeff Hornacek would end up with 29 points. And the Utah Jazz would end up getting the win 107-103 after being down 70-36 at halftime. So yeah, that had to be number one. You know, I wanted to put Kobe at number one, but when you're down 36 points and in your own home too, this was in Utah. And at the time, Utah was one of the craziest places to play because it's really, the crowd gets really loud. They still are really loud, but since they're not as good of a team, they're not as loud. But this Utah Jazz team was one of the best of all time. And they were able to come back from 36 points down and come back, have the greatest, one of the greatest NBA comebacks in NBA history still to this day. So yeah, that's the top five greatest NBA comebacks. So enjoy the great football-packed weekend of sports, and I will talk to you motherfuckers on Monday.